So at the top of this, I need to ask you verbally, do I have permission to record you?
Yes, you do.
Okay. So I am Hallie Knipp. I am working on a project with the Archives and Special Collections at Clemson University. I'm here with Eileen Kramer. We're going to discuss the School of Computing and the history of that school and department. Okay, so first thing, can we just talk a little bit about your personal history? Where are you from? Where did you go to school? Things like that.
Sure. So I was born in the Bronx and grew up on Long Island. Went to public schools there. As an undergraduate, I went to Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. I majored in biology and minored in chemistry and education, modern dance. Just as many credit hours as I could use up on my scholarship, I did. I took a bunch of things. I did take one. Started one computer science course when I was an undergrad, but the instructor was great, and then he became the department head, and they switched in another one who was not so great. And actually, the logistics of trying to take a computer science class then were very different than they are now. You had to go to a special room where there was like a little teletype-like machine, and you had to use a phone and put it in a coupler, and it would overheat, so you'd have to bring a baggie full of ice cubes and set it on there, and there was competition for it. And so just the logistics of that, of going to school and working at night, it just was too much. So I didn't continue with computer science as an undergrad.
About what year was that?
So I started college in 76. So that was in like 76 or 77. So quite a while ago. But then when I graduated, I taught high school biology and chemistry and physics for a while. And there was another teacher who was taking classes at night in computer science through what at the time was either Brooklyn Poly or Polytechnic University, Polytechnic Institute, then became Polytechnic University. More recently, like in the past 10 years or so, it has rejoined with the NYU School of Engineering and Applied Science. So they had been part of NYU, broke off for 125 years, got back together again, which is kind of funny. But so I started to take some classes, started with community college classes at night, and took those, and did a little bit of work on the side related to programming. And then while I was teaching during the day, went to school at night and took computer classes in what's called a bridge program, where your undergraduate degree is in something else, but you'd like to enter the master's. And so you take a series of courses. And then I entered the master's program, and then they gave me a teaching assistantship. I was teaching their freshman courses, and I did my master's through Poly, and then moved to Georgia, and moved to Atlanta, and worked in industry for a couple of years, a company called Online Financial, which was banking software. And so different banks would come in, and I would help them create their either their new account system or their teller system, where they would specify what the system should be like for their particular bank. And I did that for a couple of years. And then I went to grad school at Georgia Tech and got my PhD in computer science at Georgia Tech. And by this time, it was 1995 when I graduated, and then went to WashU in St. Louis as a faculty member for a few years. But the South was calling me. So I came back, and I was on the faculty at the University of Georgia for 16 years. And I kind of went through the assistant professor, associate professor, full professor. I was the department head and an associate dean at Georgia, and then Clemson recruited me for the director position. You are on mute, Hallie.
Sorry. So, what attracted you to computer science to begin with?
So I think generally, you know, I was always good with math and numbers, and then interested in science, started out as a biology major, which at the time was less mathematical than it is now, but discovered I liked biology, but chemistry was more, you know, analytical, and I liked that a little better. Oh, physics, you know, even more math and logic. And then computing is even more of applied math and logic. And I think the more abstract, the more analytical it became, the better I liked it. And so I liked that about computing. And then, you know, amusingly, I also liked the idea, oh, I hear you can do this from home. You know, that you don't have to slog into the office every day. That didn't turn out quite that way for many years, but that was a, you know, just a side thing that attracted me to it. But, you know, intellectually, it was more of the applied logic and math portions of it.
So you came to Clemson as the department head, correct?
The director of the school computing. That's right. Sure. Yeah. So we have a school rather than a department. And within the school of computing, there are multiple divisions. And so Larry Hodges wanted to step down, and they were recruiting for a new school director. And I knew Larry from Georgia Tech. He had been a faculty member there while I was a graduate student. In fact, I was his TA one semester. And then the other connection that I had to Clemson was that the former dean at Georgia Tech, Peter Freeman, was on the advisory board for the College of Engineering and Science at Clemson. And so Peter Freeman kind of recommended me. And so I think like the fall before, maybe in October or so, I was informally invited to come and give a talk. And I hadn't been to Clemson before. And so I just drove up from Athens and came and gave a talk. And, you know, kind of that was that. But then in the following spring, that's when the recruiting for the new director began. And I was encouraged to apply for that position and did.
All right. So what were some of the goals of the school and academically and otherwise when you came to Clemson, when you joined the school?
Yeah, so there was, you know, in general, of course, computer science departments, schools of computing, colleges everywhere, their general goal is to have impact for the local economy, so have good impact on the economy of South Carolina and the Southeast, but also just to increase their research ranking, their prestige of the program. So not necessarily bigger, but better, right? To have higher rankings, have higher impact research, just kind of bigger and better is one thing. Now, the other thing that was going on at Clemson when I arrived was that there was this talk of expanding to a Charleston campus. And so that was a big thing that was happening as I arrived and that I got involved in. So I would say kind of generally of the goals of the department, of the school, is really to, you know, serve the community of South Carolina and the Southeast. And in doing that, while I was director, we increased the number of graduate programs that we offered. So there's a greater variety of programs that better serve the students. And so I think that has been a big part of the goals and continues to be the goals. I really think, at least in my mind, my main philosophy of what a school of computing or any department leader should be about is what's best for the students. Department head, school director is a really tough job because you're kind of in the middle between you're working for the dean, but you're serving the faculty, right? And, you know, all for the benefit of the students. So the multiple constituencies and kind of being the connection between them, the arbiter between them, kind of managing the different priorities. I think that is the trickiest part of being either a department head or a school director.
You mentioned that the School of Computing has several different sections, if it were. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Sure. So the divisions are really the way that the faculty are organized. They are organized into different promotion and tenure units. And that means that there is a division chair who oversees the evaluation of those faculty, but also that they are evaluated for promotion and tenure by people within their specialty area, within their division. And so that can help us to recruit high quality candidates in sort of cutting edge fields, like the human-centered computing division. You know, to have so many faculty with interests and research in human-centered computing is a bit unusual for other departments. And so people with that specialization, when looking at different schools that they might go work at, knowing that they'll be evaluated for promotion and tenure by people who understand what they do, is a good selling point for us. And also the synergy among those different faculty who have overlapping interests has helped us to be very successful in that area, for example. Similarly, digital production arts. Now you had asked about what are the different divisions. I've kind of given you the reason for the divisions, but what they are is we have a computer science division, we have a human-centered computing division, and we have a visual computing division. Now, the students are organized into degree programs, and that's somewhat cross-cutting. When I first arrived, it took me a couple of weeks to figure out exactly how all this fits together. And so I created a diagram that has been used by every department head since to demonstrate like how do all our programs fit together? Because it's not that students in the HCC program only take courses from HCC faculty. Many of their courses would be from HCC faculty, but they might also take courses from visual computing faculty and computer science faculty and similarly. So students are organized into degree programs, faculty are organized into divisions, which corresponds to their promotion and tenure units. So it's a grid.
Okay. So we discussed the goals of the school when you came to Clemson. Do you think those goals have changed? And if so, how?
On a large scale, they're not very different. It's always, you know, continuing, how do we best serve our students? How do we serve South Carolina and the largely the Southeast, although we're having more and more national impact. Increased research profile. We have, you know, increasingly successful faculty. We have graduate students who are going on to faculty positions at other universities. And so continuing that, increasing the research profile of Clemson, I think continues to be a goal, along with serving the needs of the people of the state and the region.
Yeah. And how is that achieved specifically?
Yeah, so I think the best way to achieve that is with targeted excellent hiring. So looking for faculty members to recruit and staff members who are excellent and recruiting good graduate students. Of course, injections of cash help as well, right? So having funds to aid in that quest, I think is very important. And, you know, that requires the support of the college, of the university, of donors. You know, all of those things can help to provide the resources that can help us to continue to leverage up the growing excellence of the programs.
Of course, yeah. So you mentioned that when you were an undergrad in the late 70s, the kind of difficulties of taking a computer science course. So obviously things have changed. Can you maybe outline that a little bit?
Like a brief summary? Sure, yeah. And it's changed more than once, right? So back in the day, in the 70s, you know, there were these, that little teletype device where you had to go in and bring your baggie of ice cubes. A few years later, when I was at a community college, you would enter your program and, you know, generate a stack of punch cards, and you would have to take those and go turn them in at an office. And then there would be a posting of, if you turned in your materials at this time, this is when you can expect to get your job back. And you might get back, you know, a job and a listing and say, oh, I missed a semicolon online, whatever. And you'd have to redo it and resubmit it. So the turnaround time is really slow. Shortly after that, with the time sharing computers, you could just sit at a terminal and you would, you know, just type it in and submit it, and it would get compiled. And but even then, compile jobs, even when I started as a graduate student, a job to compile your program, it could take a while. And so what people would do, just like the very beginnings of the internet, they would type RN, which meant read news, and they would read internet news groups while they were waiting for their jobs to compile. And so, you know, there were joke groups, there was informational groups, you know, this is like before the web is what, this is how people access the internet. Now, compilers got faster, computers got faster and faster, compilers got faster and faster. You know, after a while, student projects, you know, you type compile and you wait a second or two and it returns and comes back. But over time, you know, it went from being this resource where you had to be like the only person in the room to there was a room full of computers and a bunch of students would be in there working at, you know, working on projects either for the same class or for different classes. But the support environment that provided as a student, like you could say, like, why, what am I doing wrong? Why isn't this working? I'm trying to compile my program, and you're not stuck alone in your dorm room trying to figure it out. You can turn to the person next to you and say, hey, can you tell me, why can't I compile? And they say, oh, you forgot to, you know, you're still just on the terminal. You need to log into the server, or, you know, you use the wrong name, or, you know, just these little obstacles that can stymie a person, you could get help with. And so that whole environment of being with other students, and there were TAs around, and there was a lab attendant, and if you ran into a problem, you could get help, and you would hear other people discussing things, and it was a communal environment. You know, fast forward to students working individually on laptops, you know, then they are a bit more on their own. Oh, except that they have, you know, the internet, where they can Google for things, and they can get a Stack Overflow will probably have the answer. If you get some weird compiler error, you can just type that in and someone's seen that before and they tell you how to handle it. So it's just been a different, you know, it has evolved.
Yeah.
Good and bad.
So it sounds like, in your opinion, the level of collaboration is really a big component of what we're looking at. Do you think that is going to continue to change, or?
Well, so in the classes that I taught, and in many of the classes at Clemson, we do have, and I hope this doesn't go away, for many of the classes, we do have labs, which means that the students actually go to a lab, and there is a TA there, and there is an assignment, and the students are working on a particular assignment, and they're all in the same room, and there's someone there to help them. I would often assign them as pair programming labs, and pair programming gives you that kind of collaboration where one person's typing, the other person's next to them, but they're working on the same artifact and are able to discuss. And some of my research has looked at this also, of people who are working on a program as a pair have to discuss it first, right? So the people who are there by themselves, they often just start typing, and they haven't completely figured out, what problem am I solving? You know, what data am I going to need? How do I need to structure this? But working as a pair, you have to negotiate a little bit and have that discussion. And through the discussion, oh, then the questions rise to the top, right? So students who are working in pairs are more likely to ask key questions at the start to figure out what they're supposed to be doing and to think about the problem and to talk about the problem. So pair programming has many benefits. Now, there's also the problem of assessment. All right, so if you're assessing people and they're working in pairs or groups, so it's kind of a trade-off, right? So you want to have some assignments that are pair programming to promote that collaboration, that discussion, and that building of camaraderie among students. I think that's really important. And then for purposes of assessment, yeah, you have to cut them loose on their own for a while too and see what they can do.
So overall, where do you see the field going in the next 5-10 years?
Where do I see the field going? I think certainly computing will continue to be at the center of our economy, of our develop, you will cut out all this stammering that I'm doing right now. So I see more and more impact of AI in the future. Figuring out ChatGPT and how to kind of take that into account as we make assignments. So some of the assignments I gave this summer, rather than having just a written description that students could cut and paste and drop into ChatGPT, I made videos that demoed the final product of what they were supposed to do and a little discussion of it. But even if they were going to use ChatGPT, they'd have to watch the video, figure out what the problem is, write up their own description of it, and put it in. There's like a higher threshold and also more thinking that goes with it. So, like with many things, it's an arms race, right? Between students and the faculty, where we want them to learn as much as they can. But I think we'll figure it out. And we'll see how to incorporate what AI can provide into what we can do with technology.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I never bring up AI in these interviews, but it has come up every single time. Mm-hmm. So clearly it's important. Kind of discuss AI in general and, what we're looking at with that.
Can I do that? So, AI is not really my specialty area. And so I don't know if I'm the best person to provide to wax poetic about where AI is going. I know that it is having an impact. It'll continue to have an impact. But it's not the the complete game changer that there's a group of AI specialists who put together this letter about the potential detrimental impact of AI on humanity or something like that. I think that was overblown, right? So certainly, when we went to the internet and students could do searches to find, other students had projects for other things. Yeah, we figured out how to deal with that. We'll figure out how to deal with this. And also how to make best use of it, how to, take the best of it and see how we can use it. And then we will adapt to, the assessment problem. And one way to adapt to the assessment problem that I have applied in the past is to meet individually with students and say, hey, tell me about your program. How does it work? And have it to be able to explain why you constructed it this way and how it's working. Okay, then you really better know how it's working. And even if you got a little help to figure out, maybe this is how I should structure it or whatever, the goal is that they've learned something, from start to finish. And so assessment techniques will adapt as well. But yeah, for society in general, just like the growth of the internet made so much information available to so many people and has given much lower thresholds to people having a voice in society for good and for bad, we'll continue to see how AI is deployed.
So you mentioned AI is not your research field. Can you speak on what is your research field and, what you've been able to do specifically during your time at Clemson?
Okay. So my earlier research at when I was at Georgia Tech and my started out as a faculty member was on parallel and distributed computing and monitoring programs while they were running and then visualizing them so that you could see what was happening and different orderings of events within those visualizations for different purposes. That was like my thesis work. And then as an early faculty member, I was looking at not only monitoring, but interactive control. So if you had a program and it was running on, you know, multiple processors or multiple machines and it was imbalanced and you wanted to make some changes, how could you direct changes in a way that maintained the correctness of the computation? So like if you were modeling some big molecule that you didn't lose an atom or duplicate it when you split it, right? That each processor had, you know, one and only one atom. Well, it's not exactly that, but each atom existed once and only once, right? You know, that it wasn't duplicated. And so I did a lot of work with that and then more into visualization and visualization and learning. So program visualization and how it helps students to learn about different kinds of algorithms. And then while I was at Clemson, my focus was really on computer science education. And so worked on several projects related to that. Jointly with Murali Sitaraman and Megan Che in the math department. We did some teacher professional development for high school and middle school teachers in South Carolina. I think that was impactful. We did professional development for, is the right word, many teachers in the state. And so then they were, had the preparation that they needed to teach these courses. And then also continue to look at undergraduate students in computer science and differential impacts of different kinds of instruction and also for students from underrepresented groups and how they progress through the program on to graduation. One of my PhD students worked in that area and he and I and others at Morehouse and Howard wrote a grant that was funded and that is ongoing and that we're tracking students through through the different years of their program. I kind of expected I might retire before that grant ended. So I brought in another professor, Bart Knienenberg, and he handed it off to him. He's the PI, but I still participate. I just didn't want it to fall flat if I pulled out before the end. So an orderly transition.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And I'm specifically interested in the work you've done with K-12 education. Can you kind of speak on, you know, so many times in education, we see K-12 as something completely separate from what we do at the university level. Mm-hmm. Can you speak on your experience with that?
So, we worked with middle school and high school teachers. So South Carolina has a requirement that all high school students have a year of computing. It's part of the graduation requirements. It's been the graduation requirement for a long time, but a couple of years ago, they tightened up the description of what could count as a computer science course. It used to be like they would do, you know, Microsoft Word and Excel and that sort of thing. So now it's actual computing where they, whether they do Scratch programming or do kind of, some of them did like Java and C or Java and C++ kind of programming, more commonly Java, different forms of the courses, but working with faculty members on that, they'd come in with a course over the summer. So we ran summer PD workshops and the teachers would come in for a week or two. And we looked at not only how to teach computing, but broadening participation in computing, kind of trying to open people up to realize, oh, all these kids can be successful, right? So if you work with them in a way that values their engagement and their input and you know, hoping to kind of change some of the math teacher mindset of, oh, these are my good kids and then there's everybody else, right? These kids can all be successful.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So I think I kind of know the answer to this just based on speaking with you today, but do you have a specific philosophy of leadership, and has that maybe changed since you came in as the director, and what might have affected those changes, if there are any?
Yeah, so, you know, there's this philosophy of management called, you know, walking around talking to people, right? All right. So I do think that position of the department head or school director is one of the most difficult in the chain. You know, when you are a regular faculty member, your focus is on your own research and your own classes, and you see the world from that point of view. When you are the dean, you see the point of view of rankings and research dollars, and as the department head or director, in between walking that line between serving the needs of the dean, because the dean needs to accomplish his or her goals, and then advocating for the faculty, who are each building their own personal research brands and doing their own, but bringing that all together and kind of solving the questions of resource allocation and how we should do things by saying, what's best for the students? So I really think that is my philosophy of what's best for the students. But another aspect, I think, is the importance of just open and honest discussion about the issues. I mean, people often come in and think, oh, if I come up with just the right like set of incentives and formulas that I can incentivize people to act one way or another, it often turns into kind of a gamesmanship sort of thing, where or these unintended consequences, where you put these little incentives in and it becomes a numbers game. And long run, that never works. You really just need to talk to people and get everybody on board for, this is the goal of our group as a whole, and this is how we're going to work things through, and just talking things through with people and getting buy-in. And the other thing is to realize you can't make everybody happy. You can try, but you can't.
So in your teaching and in your like management style, it sounds like collaboration is really important to you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it is. I really think it's all about people, you know, and connecting well with people. I think in the School of Computing, when I came in, Mark Smotherman was the associate director. He had been the associate director for a long time. And Clemson School of Computing was so lucky to have Mark, because having Mark, someone who was very calm and reasonable and friendly, and everyone trusted Mark, because you can trust Mark, that we didn't get into that kind of numbers game, you know, formulaic approaches to things that go wrong, that, you know, you could just say, well, Mark is trying to balance the needs of the department between how much money we have this year and how many TAs we need and research assistantships, and just, we know he's trying to do the right thing. So he's been a blessing, really, for the whole School of Computing. He's done a great job and made the School of Computing at Clemson the collegial place that it is. I've been at a number of different universities, and the faculty at Clemson is the most collegial of any of those places. It's a great place to work, and the people are wonderful.
Fantastic. So what are some things that you wanted to accomplish during your time at Clemson and were able to?
Yeah, so a big challenge when I first arrived was launching the Charleston programs. And I did an awful lot of driving back and forth from Clemson to Charleston. And then discovering, if you take 5 or 6 hours to drive from, well, maybe not quite that long, let's say 5, to drive from Clemson to Charleston, all the work that you would have done during that time is still there. You still have to do it. So it was a lot of driving. It got launched, and it turned out beautifully. The building down there is fabulous, and the programs are taking off. It was a big deal to do that. And I learned in that process, like, how do you start new programs like that? And working with people in the provost's office and the, in the financial world to, you know, sit down and say, you know, come up with a financial model for this, and sitting around saying, well, how many students will you have and what tuition and what will the expenses be? And everything is just, you know, just kind of spitballing, you know, just kind of, you know, guessing at what tuition can we charge? How many people will apply? How much will it cost to do this? And coming up with a financial model that will work to get these programs written up and approved. And so I was involved in writing up many of these different programs that we started and learning that financial modeling process. And it's a little scary, but it seems to be working out. So,
yeah, it seems like just from talking to people in the computer science program and, you know, academia and generally in general, we seem to be in this unique position where we've, you know, if you make it, you are in like management and business decisions that we're not necessarily trained for.
That is right.
Can you speak on that experience?
Well, I mean, there are people who are trained in the financial and business parts, but in those meetings we were having with them and building these financial models, they were trying to extract from us our domain knowledge. And still we were working under an uncertainty, because when you're doing things that haven't been done before, there's no exact like playbook of what to do. So, you know, a lot of those decisions made by Bob Jones and Jim Clements on how to move forward on different kinds of programs, there's a certain amount of finger crossing that goes along with it, because you don't know what's going to happen in the economy. But the, you know, assessing what are the needs in the state, what are the needs of the region, what do students, are we filling a need for the students, the potential students, the people of South Carolina and businesses in South Carolina and the region, and trying to figure that out. And I think largely the programs we put together have been successful. So launching the Charleston programs, the digital production arts program is down there, our computer science program is down there. I mean, that was a big deal. Other things that I was involved in that I wanted to accomplish at Clemson and did, we did not have an undergraduate capstone project when I started, and the people at NC State has a fabulous one, and they were very willing to share their knowledge. The person who runs their program came, I invited her to Clemson, and she gave a talk and kind of told us how they did it, and we took from that idea how to do it. And Alex Herzog, who was one of our faculty members, I tasked him with running the first ones, and he did a great job. And that program continues. Alex has left, but under other supervision now. Another big thing we did was working with the Medical University of South Carolina, and within Clemson, not only School of Computing, but Public Health and other departments, to develop the Biomedical Data Science and Informatics PhD program. So that was a big deal. Just we got together at kind of a campsite building in the middle of, you know, near Columbia, and sat and met and talked about like, what should this program look like? And used our combined knowledge to develop this program. Then there were visits back and forth down to MUSC, and MUSC folks would come up to Clemson. And I wound up writing a CHE document. That's the Commission on Higher Education proposal. And the people that worked on that, let's see, from MUSC, John Vina, Jihao Bayed, Alex Alexienko, Ron Gimbel in Nursing and Public Health at Clemson, Brian Dean, who's now the new director of the School of Computing, all worked together on that. And we got that approved, and that's gotten launched, and that is successful. And now we also have a master's in that. So that has been huge. And then the most recent thing that I wanted to do at Clemson and was asked to do after I stepped down as director was put together this program called the MSCS Ready Program. So in the same way that when I had an undergraduate degree in biology but thought I might like to do graduate study in computing, you need to have some kind of a a bridge program to make that transition. And so I was asked to develop that, and with some input from Mark Smotherman, who knows our curriculum so well, having been here for so many years, developed this set of 6 2-credit-hour courses that students take 2 per semester over the course of 1 year. And at the end of that year, they are prepared to enter our master's program. So I put that program together, developed all the courses, teach all the courses, and that has been, you know, seeing linear growth. We had, we advertised it June of, I guess, 2020, and had 10 or 12 people sign up by August, and went through the first year. And then the next year we had, you know, oh, maybe 20 students. And now this year we've got 35 something students. And so it is growing, and it serves a need. So it brings in people who didn't major in computing as an undergrad and have been out in the world of work and now think, gee, I wish I had, you know, gotten more computing background, or I would like to do a master's in computing. And how do I prepare myself to enter that program? This meets that need. And so it helps to feed good students into our master's program, but it also meets the needs of other South Carolina residents who have used this preparation to go on to other programs, University of Washington, NC State, the Georgia Tech Online Master's in Computer Science. They're all kind of prepared for that. And so that's what I've been doing the last couple of years, since like 2019, after I stepped down as school director. That has been my baby. So
yeah, and I mean, that makes sense, since so much of your research has been in computer science education. So on the flip side, what are some things that you maybe weren't so successful in during your time at Clemson?
Yeah, so the one thing that I wish we had, and that I think could really benefit us, is to have a pool of funding for incoming PhD students to be on research assistantship for year one and just do lab rotations. And with that, we could recruit the best and brightest, right? As soon as they apply, we could say, oh, that's a great one. We're not sure who they're going to work with or what their research area is going to be, but we want that. And we can make early good offers that are very attractive to the students and guarantee them 4 years of funding. That continues to be a struggle. We have funding for incoming students as TAs, but not every student who's coming into our programs has exactly the right profile to be a teaching assistant. And for faculty-sponsored RAs, new PhD students come in, they're not necessarily fully productive on grants until they've been here a year or so and had time to take courses and learn research methods and things. And so I think we could really increase the strength of our PhD students by having such a program. And then if we have this pool, we can recruit the best and brightest, and having good PhD students makes faculty productive. And if faculty are productive, then we produce even better research and we bring in more grant money and we have more impactful publications. So it's kind of a virtual cycle. If you can have that, you can feed that in at the front. And so that has been a challenge, to have that kind of pool of funding that is not yet assigned to a particular faculty member. And I know with the economy and the effects of the pandemic, that has been tight. But I think if someone were looking to say, hey, I have, you know, and many, you know, tens of or hundreds of thousands of dollars that I want to invest in computing, that would be the place to put it. And being able to, because once you have good PhD students coming in, you can hire good faculty to work with those PhD students. Because for faculty members, that is the key asset. Yes, they can have a nice lab. Yes, you can pay them good salaries, but the bottleneck for them is good PhD students to work with. And for PhD students, knowing that they're going to a school where they'll have that kind of support. And it's just, again, virtuous cycle. Once you have good students, you have good faculty, makes it easier to get better students and better faculty, and you can kind of ratchet your way up, which is really the goal that that our dean and university would like to see, right? A really highly ranked and impactful graduate program or set of graduate programs. We have 10 of them at this point, I think, so.
Yeah, I mean, as a graduate student, that makes complete sense to me. But so is there some specific aspect of your research or work that you feel just really proud of during your time at Clemson? You mentioned the Bridge Program.
Yeah, the Bridge Program, certainly. The teacher professional development for computer science, I think, was impactful. And the work with my graduate student, Kazembe Kennedy, who, you know, I worked with, but largely he wrote that grant and got funded, and he's still working with us on it. He is at a different school now. He's at Vanderbilt, but he continues to work on that. The what are they thinking work and looking at, you know, how can we broaden participation in computing and understanding the obstacles that students encounter as they progress through the program and onto graduation, because you can't make things better until you really understand the landscape. And so looking at what are the obstacles that they are encountering and what are they thinking and how we can make it better. So I think that work I'm particularly proud of.
So is there anything that you would like to speak on? You know, I'm just kind of opening the door so you can have an opportunity to have these things on record that I didn't ask you about specifically.
Well, I just want to say, and I've said a little bit before, that I think Clemson is a fabulous place to work, that I think President Clements and Bob Jones have really been very strategic in how they're building the university and the innovations that they've made, and that the School of Computing is a wonderful place to work, and the people are fabulous. And I feel very lucky to have come to Clemson.